we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And seven is humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So Susan, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Susan Twining. And two of my favorite steps, the shortest pages, paragraphs in the big book. And it's very deceptive, in my opinion. I disagree with the big book when it, at the end of the second paragraph, it says, we've now completed step seven. I totally disagree with that paragraph. Because I think it's only a start. I'm going to tell you, I say the seven-step prayer every single day. Because I believe that we're working on those steps for the rest of our lives, every single day for the rest of our lives. But the directions for page for these steps are on page 76. Like I said, it's two little paragraphs. And it tells us that we're going to ask God to remove those defects of character. The six-step prayer is, Dear God, I am ready for your help in removing from me the defects of character which I now realize are obstacles to my recovery. Help me continue being honest with myself and guide me towards spiritual and mental health. Amen. And I don't know that one by heart because I don't say it very often. But the seven-step prayer I do know by heart. And that is, My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And like I said, at the end of that paragraph, it says you've not completed step seven. Like I said, I think that's a lie. Because I have not completed it. The only defects I'm going to get rid of are the ones that I see as a problem. And over the years, what I have found is that I still have defects that I'm holding on to because I don't see them as a problem. And the one little story that I have to share is, I was a flirt. I was a wild flirt. And I dated many men over the years. And I was dating this gentleman, and we had been dating for quite some time. And he came to me and he told me, he says, you know, your flirting with other men hurts me. And I looked at him and I laughed and I said, you know who I'm going home with. Why does it bother you? I did not see it as harmful behavior. And I went to my sponsor and I told her what he had said. And she says, but if it's harming him, don't you think you need to take a look at that? So I did. I ran the steps on it. And I realized that if it was harming him, it would be harming our relationship. So I did the steps on it and I figured out why I did it. And it went back to when I was a child. Because when I was a child, I was raised by my aunts and uncles and grandparents, and I used flirting as a way to get attention. And I was still using it for the same thing. It was a way for me to get attention. And I realized that didn't really serve the same purpose for me anymore. I didn't need it anymore. So I learned to stop flirting with men in order to get attention. And so I stopped the behavior. And I stopped using it for that old reason. And our relationship did improve. And I realized that behavior of flirting had harmed our relationship. And I'm going to tell you, he and I did break up a couple of years later, not for that reason. It was for another reason. But that I held on to that old behavior and that character defect. Because I didn't see it as harmful behavior. But when it was pointed out to me, I have to be willing to make that change. So I'm quite sure that I have character defects today that other people see as a problem, that at some point in time somebody's going to point out to me and say, that's harmful, that hurts me, and I better be willing to take a look at it. And things do come up. People do point out things to me sometimes that say that what you're doing harms me. And I'd better be willing to take a look at it. I've done that with my kids. I've done it with my parents. I've done it with people I sponsor. I don't ever intentionally harm someone, but if somebody points out something to me that's harming someone, I'd better be willing to take a look at it. Like I said, I don't necessarily see it as a problem, but once it's pointed out to me that it's a problem, I'd better be willing to take a look at it. Now, old defects creep back in. the day I stop working on my character defects, they start creeping back in. And when I stop working on stuff altogether, as I found out when I stopped going to meetings and I stopped working a program of recovery, they come crashing back in. Those defects aren't, they're waiting right there for me. All my old defects. Because, you know, I did the steps and I got rid of the lying and the cheating and the dishonesty and the all those old defects. I got rid of them all. But when I stopped going to meetings and I stopped working with a sponsor, they came crashing back in. And I became that person I used to be. So when I came back to meetings, I had to get rid of them all again. And I had to become a sober person that I always wanted to be. And today, I have to do these steps on a daily basis. I do 6 and 7 every day. I ask God to remove these defects because it's so easy to slip back into it. You know, you're at the store and somebody drops a $10 bill in front of you. That first thought, really, the first thought I have is, ooh, I could use that. And yes, I probably could. But then I pick it up and I hand it to the person in front of me that dropped it. And I say, you dropped this. Because that's the honest thing to do. But my first thought, honest to God, is I could use that. So, you know, that I'm not completely 100% honest. I'm just being totally honest about that one. I'm not completely a saint yet. Give me time. It says right in the 12 and 12 that this is the step that separates the men from the boys. And I remember hearing at a workshop that they purposely left in the big book that the first 100, when they were writing it, they purposely left that step vague in the big book because it's a very personal step. Everybody's going to work it to the best of their ability. They couldn't give too many instructions about it because it is such a personal step. Everybody's got different defects. Everybody's going to work it differently. Everybody's going to get rid of their defects at a different pace. So they purposely left it vague for a reason. But I hear a lot of people say, oh yeah, I said the prayer and I'm done it. Well, what I do is when I get to 6 and 7, I give all my girls this book. Best book ever for 6 and 7. No, it's not conference approved. But every one of my girls that I give it to that reads it says it's the best book they've ever read for dropping their defects. I do know that they started a meeting here in Erie, and they did write to New York and ask for permission to use it as an AA book, and they were given permission to use it as an AA book, even though it's not conference approved. But what it does is it gives you clear-cut instructions on how to drop the rock of your defects, to get rid of those defects that you're holding on to, because we hold on to them like we hold on to those old safety blankets. Because we're comfortable with those defects. We developed those defects for a purpose, to protect ourselves. And we don't give them up lightly. There's a reason why we developed them and why we held on to them. And giving them up is hard. So some of them are easy to give up. Dishonesty was easy to give up. It really was. It was easier to get honest than it was to give up flirting. It was easier to get cash register honesty than it was for me to give up the defect of what I'm trying to think of what was one of the hardest ones I had to give up. But I can't really think of another one right now. But when I was doing the 6th and 7th steps, I was holding on to them. I realized I was holding on to them very tightly. And I was not giving them up very easily. And my sponsor was saying, just let go. Just let go of them. And she says, you're holding on to them tighter than you held on to anything else you've ever held on to in your life. Just let go. And she took me to a retreat in Princeton. And she took me to a conference in New York City. And she took me, and she's going, just let go of those defects. Let go, like you let fear. I held on to fear like you would not believe. Because it was safe for me. Because if I could hold on to my fear, then I didn't have to do anything. It was an excuse for me. Because if I'm afraid to go someplace new, then I don't have to do anything. Life was easier for me to be afraid than it was for me to have adventure. And these were defects. These were easy defects for me to hold on to. I really don't have a lot to share on 6 and 7 as much as I do when I get into the next step, because the next step was where it was really easy for me to start letting go of a lot of things. But when you look at 6 and 7, this is where you begin to, when you're letting these things go, you feel the freedom. When you finally do let them go, and you realize that you have let them go, I feel the freedom. Because I finally, when I realized that I had let go of them to the degree that I wasn't holding on to it anymore, I felt a lightness. Like I had never felt a lightness before. When I let go of the fear, that fear of picking up the telephone, that fear of going into a meeting by myself. My sponsor would drive me to a meeting and then sit in the car for 10 minutes and make me walk in by myself. And I hated her for it. But she would drive me 2 hours to a meeting and then make me walk in by myself because I knew no one. But she knew how afraid I was. But she was going to help me break that fear if it took her last breath, she was going to break me of that fear. But the first time I finally went in there the one time and actually walked around and shook everybody's hand, and I realized I had done it. When I walked out that night, I felt so light and free. And I called her a week later and said, I drove an hour to a meeting that I had never been to before, and I walked in and I greeted everyone and I did this, and you didn't have to drive me there. She took me out for a steak dinner. You know, because I finally broke my fear. I finally stepped beyond, and I realized how free I really was. Once we confront that and we realize that we have gone beyond what we used to be. When I stopped going to meetings and when I came back and I realized I had all this work to do over again. And when I realized, when Bill had approached me about my flirting, and I honestly did not realize that that was a harmful behavior. But when he approached me about that and I sat down and I did the work and I realized how harmful it really was. And he and I were in a relationship for 7 years. And I'm going to say we were probably in the relationship about 4 years when he pointed that out to me. And we continued to date for another 3 years after that. And how our relationship improved once I stopped that behavior. I will tell you today, we broke up about almost 8 years ago. We're best friends today. I talk to him every single night at 8 o'clock. He's a wonderful friend. I think I'm the only person on the face of the earth that talks to him, man, every single day. What a change in my life that I can be friends with someone I broke up with. And I told him, just not too long ago, I told him, I said, you know, I'm really grateful that you're in my life and I don't need anything from you. And he didn't understand what I was saying, but it doesn't matter, I knew what I was saying. But the idea, because every man that I ever broke up with, it was a disaster, but the police called and hatred and despair and anger on both sides. And when he and I broke up, it was very calm. And it was, this just isn't working for me anymore. I still like you and I still love you, but I cannot date you any longer. And it took about 3 months, and then we started talking every day again. And that is as a result of the 12 steps, of my having gotten rid of some of my character defects, of his having gotten rid of some of his character defects, that we're able to remain friends today. That we didn't have to create drama, and that we can remain friends today, and we can be friends for each other and be there for each other today. You know, I've been going through a really rough year, and it's been so nice that at 8 o'clock I know my phone's gonna ring or his phone's gonna ring, and we're gonna talk to each other for about 10 or 15 minutes, and he's just gonna be there. I had some financial difficulties. He made sure my dog got fed every single day. Okay? When I didn't have dog food, he fed my dog. That's what real friends are for. And, you know, I can't describe what that means to know that that person is going to be there for me emotionally where before I would have blocked him out emotionally, because that's what I had to do to people that I threw out of my life. But, and I'm going to say it's directly attributed to this sixth and seventh step, changing character defects, because I wasn't able to emotionally connect to people that I didn't date anymore. So the character defect that I got rid of was being that emotional connection to people that I don't date anymore, that I threw out of my life. I was able to change that through working six and seven. I really don't have much more to share on this, and I know I didn't share very long tonight, so we'll go ahead and open it up for questions.
Thank you, Susan. So now, like you said, we'll open things up to questions and answers. So anybody here in the room that has a question, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get the microphone over to you. And anybody on Zoom, feel free to just unmute yourself at any point and share your question as well. So who would like to get us started?
Hey, Susan, thank you so much. Reach up there. Helen Alcoholic here. Thanks a lot for your sharing tonight. And as you were talking about these defects of character and getting them removed, I have read Drop the Rock several times, and it is helpful, but one that still works on me. You know, it's easy to begin not practicing a character defect that is of word or deed, you know, that someone else can see. But, you know, I still have a thinking problem. And I need some suggestions on how to stop practicing the defect in my thinking as God's removing it from me. There you go.
Oh, gee, thanks. You don't give me the easy ones, do you, Helen? The thinking ones, about the best I can suggest for the thinking ones is exactly what I suggested to someone I sponsored the other day, is that through writing down the positives instead of the negatives of what you're thinking, like, how did I put it to her the other day? Because what this person is doing is they're telling themselves all the negatives. So I'm having them write down the positives of the thinking problem. Instead of thinking the negative, I'm having them write the positive of the situation and the thinking problem.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to have to listen to it on the website because the internet went a little nasty and I lost some of your words. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll call you and I'll re-explain it then.
Thanks.
Hello, Susan. Bruce, alcoholic.
Hi, Bruce.
I've had this question on my mind, and you can just politely tell me it really doesn't matter, but on the third step prayer, it's a lot of holiness and the and thou. It doesn't end with an amen. I'm pretty sure I'm positive of that. Then you go to the seventh step prayer, and it's just more, I love that. Talking to the Creator, and it has an amen. And I heard, I don't know when, that somebody said, well, that's the third step prayer, and everything you do until you get to the seventh step, they're tied together. What's your taking at? Or am I just being too detailed looking at reading the book and go, why doesn't it say amen here, but it says here?
I never thought about it, I'll be honest.
Well, that's my thinking, you know. I might have a thinking problem.
Don't we all? I never really thought about why it doesn't have an amen at the end of the third step prayer. But it does kind of tie in, I think, that it's when you say the third step prayer. I say the third step prayer at the beginning of my meditation, and I say the seventh step prayer at the end of my meditation. So I would say amen at the end, but not at the beginning. So I guess I've never really thought about that. So I guess I've never thought that deep into it. But see me next week and I will have thought about this quite a bit. And I will have an answer for you.
Okay, thank you.
Who else has a question for Susan? Anyone else on Zoom?
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you? Man, you had some tough questions tonight. Oh, my gosh. For a couple of short paragraphs, it was really tough. I'm just sitting here. My question is regarding, I know what Bill said, or what people said Bill said. The difference between a shortcoming and a character defect. Do you have any thoughts on that other than just yes?
Though there is no difference between them. They're the same thing. I mean, they just used a different word. Somebody got out this thesaurus and found a different word to mean the same thing so that they didn't sound boring.
Okay. I've heard that, I think that's the standard AA answer, that, you know, Bill just didn't want to use the same word twice.
Right.
But I've also had people share with me that there was a difference in degree between shortcoming and character defect. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't think there is a difference.
Okay. Still there?
If you could look it up and tell me what the difference in degree is.
I don't know.
That's your homework for this week.
Oh, good.
For the quiz next week.
God, never asking another question. Oh, Lord. Okay, I'll look it up in the dictionary.
All right.
Thank you. You're welcome, Kevin.
Okay, one more question. Susan, I'm Leslie, alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
And I attend that meeting that studies step 6 and 7 and it uses those, you know, books, and I find it really helpful. And but what I was wondering was, you know, to the way I have come to understand this, and I thought I knew, I don't know, I thought whatever I thought, but I'm amazed that the surrender never stops and that the learning never stops, and that 6 and 7 is a tool for that. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on using 6 and 7 as the tools toward coming to an emotional sobriety, coming to, I mean, when I drank, I acted like a baby, and I needed to grow up. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on using 6 and 7 as a tool toward finally growing up and acting like a grown woman instead of a baby.
I do believe that 6 and 7 are the pathway to emotional sobriety. I think that until we actually start practicing 6 and 7 on a daily basis, that we do stay in that put the plug in the jug mentality. Because I've seen a lot of people get sober and stay sober for a lot of years who did 6 and 7 based on, I said the prayer, now I'm done. And then years later, go through an emotional crisis and go back and look at the steps and start practicing the steps a different way and get emotional sobriety, but it's because they looked at 6 and 7 different. And then they started practicing it on a daily basis and they grew up, and then it stops being put the plug in the jug sobriety. And I've seen them grow up. And I mean, I'm thinking of specific people that I saw get 30 plus years sobriety and change their whole outlook on sobriety, and changed and grew up. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, I had 25 years sobriety and away from a drink before I grew up and started practicing the sobriety that I practice today. And it's as a direct result of looking at 6 and 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 differently. I mean, I had plug-in-the-jug sobriety for a lot of years. And it's way different from the sobriety I have today. I mean, I've become a big book thumper, like, of the nth degree. I don't care what people think of my big book thumping. I hand the big book, I hand drop the rock to people. I don't mind offending people today. Okay, you know, I say it like it is, and I don't, it doesn't bother me when people say, well, you're tough. Well, okay, yeah, so I am. I've had girls fire me because I'm too tough. But you know what? The ladies that I do sponsor that stick with me, they get sober. And they're happy. You know, they get happy. And but no, plug-in-the-jug sobriety doesn't work for me anymore. And people who have that kind of sobriety, I just look at them and I go, would you like to read this book? It's a really, really good book. If you might read this book, it might change your whole life. You know? And they, well, it's not conference approved. Well, you know what? Don't worry about the conference approved. Read that book. It'll change your life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Lonnie, alcoholic.
Hi, Lonnie.
Hi. I was wondering if you think that there are any character defects that simply cannot be removed.
I think every single character defect can be changed if you desire it to enough of a degree. You have to want to change it.
Yeah. Okay. Simple enough?
Yep.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Petty alcoholic. What would you say to someone
who gets bogged down in step 6 and 7 because it's overwhelming.
But you just keep on working at it in pieces and just keep plugging away, and it will get easier and it will get better.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Zoom? Last call? All right. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.